Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Odessa American for Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Obituaries. Melba Lorene Preston Sykes, Odessa. Melba Lorene Preston Sykes was born in the tiny hamlet of Hale Center, Texas, on Monday, August 18, 1930, to Arnett Carey, A.C., and Dorcia Faye Preston, and was welcomed into the arms of her loving Savior on Saturday afternoon, January 23, 2021. Her life of 9 1/2 years was marked only by measles as a toddler and mumps when she was in her mid-20s, until dementia in her 80s was accelerated by a very brief COVID diagnosis in late 2020. She was a wonderful wife to Abbott B. Happ Sykes until his passing in December 2012. Melba is preceded in death by her husband of 61 years, Abbott B. Happ Sykes, her middle son, Stephen Preston Sykes of Odessa, Texas, two of her three siblings, her sister, Kepha Lewis of Springfield, Missouri, and her brother, Carl Preston of Abilene, Texas, and her parents, A.C. and Dosia Preston of Brick Spring, Texas. Melba is survived by her daughter and son-in-law, Judy and John Dalton of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, her two sons, Barry of Odessa, Texas, and Nathan of Providence, Rhode Island. Her remaining siblings and older sister, Margie Weller, resides in Denver, Colorado. Mom is also survived by three grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts can be designated to Youth Ministry Grace Christian Fellowship, 3450 Billy Hicks Road, Odessa, Texas, 79765. A celebration of Melba's life will be on Wednesday, February 3, 2021 at 1 p.m. in the sanctuary of Grace Christian Fellowship. Burial will follow this celebration with a graveside service at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences, please sign our guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death Notices. Jesus Francisco Acosta, Midland. Jesus Francisco Acosta, 71, of Midland, died Sunday, January 31, 2021, in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. February 4, 2021, at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Rosary will be held on Wednesday, February 3, 2021, at 7 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Arrangements are by Natalie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Sarah Lou Watts Carver, Odessa. Sarah Lou Watts Carver, 80, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 16, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. on Wednesday, February 10, 2021, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will be held privately. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Guadalupe M. McVeigh, Odessa. Guadalupe M. McVeigh, 92, died Monday, January 25, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Odessa Funeral Home, 7511 of Odessa. Irene Navarrete, Odessa. Irene Navarrete, 62, died Sunday, January 31, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Margie Jo Farrell Newman, Odessa. Margie Jo Farrell Newman, 79, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 30, 2021, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Jesse Ontiveros, Midland. Jesse Ontiveros, 67, of Midland, died Sunday, January 31, 2021, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m., February 17, 2021, at American Heritage Chapel. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. This is the oil page. This article is entitled, OPEC Plus Success with Oil Strategy Buys Time Before Tough Choices, by Grant Smith from Bloomberg. OPEC and its allies can celebrate their success in steadying the world oil markets when they gather this week, but the coalition will soon be faced with some tough choices. Last month's pledge by Saudi Arabian Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman to slash production by a further 1 million barrels a day has buttressed global markets against the latest onslaught from the pandemic. A price rebound to $55 a barrel is shoring up producers' revenues without causing an excessive spike. While that relieves OPEC Plus of any need to adjust policy on Wednesday, they'll need to start considering how long to restrain output, a calculation clouded by the potential return of supply from fellow member Iran. At the heart of the dilemma is a fundamental tension between the Saudis and their most critical partner in the alliance, Russia. While Riyadh has sought higher prices to cover government spending, Moscow, without the same pressures, agitates to claw back market share. Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman's doctrine that you err on the side of caution has been vindicated, said Halima Croft, chief commodity strategist at RBC Capital Markets, LLC. On Wednesday, we might get the contours of the arguments that will be made next month. Delicate cuts. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners have resolved this year to restore some of the 7.2 million barrels of daily output, roughly 7% of global supplies. They continue to idle after making vast production cuts when the pandemic erupted last spring. The restrictions have proved effective, turning around an oil market that last April briefly saw prices plunge below zero, and throwing a financial lifeline to producers around the world, from tiny African states to corporate giants. Restoring the halted production, however, is turning out to be a delicate process. Although OPEC Plus is scheduled to revive a total of 2 million barrels a day this year, it agreed to a two-month pause after the first 500,000-barrel installment in January, as new virus infections menaced fuel demand. Riyadh doubled down on the curbs by announcing an extra 1 million barrel cutback of its own. On Wednesday, a panel that oversees the alliance's strategy, the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee, will convene online to assess the outlook. The JMMC is unlikely to recommend new policies, which will instead be tackled at the next full ministerial meeting in early March, according to delegates who declined to be identified. The Saudi cut has brought OPEC Plus some time, said Bill Farren-Price, a director at research at the firm Enverus and veteran observer of the cartel. The question of what to do next will loom over their discussions on Wednesday. Prince Abdulaziz's preference for keeping output constrained has been validated by a bumpy rollout of vaccines and renewed lockdowns in key consumers such as China. Major oil traders agree the market won't recover until air travel picks up sometime in the third quarter. Shale dilemma. Russia, on the other hand, fears that supporting prices too long will backfire, provoking investment in U.S. shale oil and a flood of new supply that will negate OPEC Plus's hard work. At last month's meeting, Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak proposed a production increase and tried to dissuade the prince from his unilateral cut. It's going to be a hell of a fight at the OPEC Plus March meeting, said Helge Andre Martensen, senior oil market analyst at DNB Bank ASA. Russia will consider it a massive failure if OPEC Plus cuts start to stimulate growth in U.S. shale again, while at the same time they're sitting on plenty of spare capacity. Russia isn't the only member that might push for relaxing the curbs. Iraq is in the grip of an economic crisis and desperately needs the revenues that would come from higher oil sales. The United Arab Emirates is seeking to promote a benchmark oil contract that depends on plentiful output, and last year briefly broke ranks with Riyadh to open the taps. Then there's the complication of Iran. President Joe Biden is seeking to reactivate a nuclear agreement that would lift U.S. sanctions on the Islamic Republic, allowing the return of almost 2 million barrels of daily output. With the end of the maximum pressure campaign waged by former President Donald Trump, Iranian exports have already crept higher. Still, Secretary of State Antony Blinken says an agreement remains a long way off. As the two sides jockey for leverage and Tehran presses on with uranium enrichment, they could be headed for a new rupture rather than reconciliation, according to RBC's Croft. Instead of extra barrels, markets may need to brace for a geopolitical tremor, she cautions. But if a deal is struck, OPEC Plus will need to choose between cutting output further or seeing their efforts to drain surplus oil stockpiles founder. It's unclear how readily Saudi Arabia would make way for the comeback of its political nemesis. Iran's export hike is another emerging challenge for OPEC Plus, said Farren-Price. It's one they may need to factor into their plans sooner rather than later. This article is entitled, Oil Jumps to One-Year High with Depleting Supplies Aiding Rally, by Andres Guerra-Luz from Bloomberg. Oil climbed to the highest level in over a year as tightening global supplies and signs of strength in physical markets aided crude's virus recovery rally. Futures rose 2.3% in New York, earlier rising above $55 a barrel for the first time in a year. Crude has been climbing steadily since late last year as coronavirus vaccines and producers' supply curbs boost expectations of a tighter market. OPEC and its allies expect to drain an oil surplus by the middle of the year. Meanwhile, there continue to be signs of strength in the market for physical barrels of oil, with Royal Dutch Shell PLC bidding for more cargoes of benchmark North Sea crude on an S&G Global Platts pricing window. The bids come a day after the oil major staged the heaviest buying by a single company since at least 2008. West Texas Intermediate for March delivery advanced to $1.21 to settle at $54.76 a barrel. There's hope around the vaccine rollouts at the same time that we're seeing a lot from the majors and international players about cutting back on production, said Gary Cunningham, director at Stamford, Connecticut-based Tradition Energy. Those two factors are combining to keep us toward the upper end of the range. The rally in headline crude prices and buying binge in physical markets comes amid a markedly tighter structure in the oil futures curve this year. Nearby Brent, time spreads are trading in the biggest backwardation in a year, a bullish structure where nearer-dated contracts trade at a premium to later-dated ones, suggesting supply tightness. Last month's pledge by Saudi Arabian energy Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman to slash production by a further 1 million barrels a day has buttressed global markets. On Wednesday, a panel that oversees OPEC's strategy, the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee, will convene online to assess the outlook. The JMMC is unlikely to recommend new policies, which will instead be tackled at next full OPEC Plus meeting in early March. In the U.S., analysts are expecting domestic crude inventories declined last week, according to a Bloomberg survey. The industry-funded American Petroleum Institute will report its figures later Tuesday ahead of the U.S. government's strategy storage tally on Wednesday. Still, technical indicators point to prices being due for a pullback, with both Brent and WTI settling above their upper Bollinger bands. At the same time, the near-term impact of the pandemic on demand limits how far crude's rally can extend. Even amid a spate of unplanned refinery outages that would normally boost gasoline prices on the U.S. Gulf Coast, they are barely causing a ripple as the pandemic continues to cap fuel demand. Meanwhile, retail investors using online chat rooms like Reddit will be hard-pressed to influence other commodity markets beyond silver, Goldman Sachs Group Inc.'s Jeff Currie said in a Bloomberg television interview. When you start to get to markets like oil and natural gas, the liquidity is substantially larger and becomes much more difficult to do, Curry said. To be the marginal driver in these markets like they were in silver yesterday is a much larger question mark. This article is entitled Oil and Gas Contributes $3 Million to New Mexico Politics During 2020 Election Cycle, by Adrian Hedden, Carlsbad Current Argus, New Mexico. Oil and gas exerted a multi-million dollar influence in New Mexico politics in 2020, a year that saw the election of Democrat President Joe Biden, who took aggressive action related to extraction in his first month in office as Democrats continued control of the New Mexico government in Santa Fe. Biden quickly ordered a review of all environment-raised federal regulations, placing a moratorium on leasing and drilling permit decisions on federal land. In New Mexico, state lawmakers appeared emboldened toward an environmentalist agenda as numerous bills related to climate change, carbon emissions, and mitigating the impacts of oil and gas moved through the legislature during the ongoing sessions. But the politicians who ultimately make these decisions were lobbied by the oil and gas industry to the tune of about $3.3 million, per a recent study by New Mexico Ethics Watch. Even as the market struggled during the COVID-19 pandemic with slumping oil prices and shrinking production, the study documented $3.29 million in direct contributions from the industry to candidates, committees, and political action committees in the state during 2020's primary and general elections. Meanwhile, oil and gas contributed more than $2 billion, or more than a third of New Mexico's general field in the last fiscal year, records show, even after the pandemic led to prices plummeting as low as minus $40 per barrel, but recovering to more than $50 per barrel by the end of January. In its report, Ethics Watch studied campaign contributions and spending of 50 oil and gas companies and 29 individual contributions aligned with the industry. The Chevron Corporation was the top donor. The study read, spending about $1.8 million in 2020. Chevron's lobbyists gave $700,000 during the primary election to an Austin-based PAC called New Mexico Strong, the report read. More than 70% of the industry's political contributions came from out-of-state groups, the report read. Republicans received 60% of the industry's contributions, read the report, but prominent New Mexico Democrats also received funding, such as $182,000 to House Speaker Brian Egolf, D-47, and $67,500 to the New Mexico Senate Democrats PAC. Senator Stephen Neville, R-2, was the highest recipient of funding from the industry, with 40% of his campaign contributions coming from oil and gas, the report read, followed by Representative Nathan Small, D-36, at 35%, and Republican Senator Craig Brandt, R-40, who serves as Senate Minority Whip, and Representative Jim Townsend, R-54, who serves as House Minority Leader, both at about 30%. Supporters of oil and gas argued it served as a main economic driver of New Mexico's economy and thus deserved a seat at the table when developing policy. Robert McIntyre, spokesman from the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association, said the study ignored the money spent to lobby opposition to oil and gas and ignored the contributions the industry makes to the state. This article is entitled Oil Roundup by Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. ExxonMobil reports $20 billion loss in fourth quarter. Launches carbon capture venture. ExxonMobil reported its fourth straight quarterly loss, capping a challenging 2020 marked indelibly by a global pandemic and the worst oil bust in a generation. The Irving oil major, the nation's largest, on Tuesday said it lost $20.1 billion during the fourth quarter, compared with a loss of $680 million in the third quarter and a loss of $1.1 billion in the second. Revenue improved slightly to $46.5 billion in the fourth quarter, up from $46.2 billion in the third quarter and $32.6 billion in the second. The past year presented the most challenging market conditions ExxonMobil has ever experienced, CEO Darren Woods said in a statement. While the effects of the pandemic significantly impacted our 2020 results, our previously executed strategic initiatives and reorganizations enabled us to decisively permanently improve our cost structure, drive greater efficiencies across our businesses, and emerge a stronger company. Indeed, 2020 posed an extraordinary challenge for oil and gas companies, which saw demand for crude evaporate with economic lockdowns and travel restrictions to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Exxon said it lost $22.4 billion in 2020, compared with a profit of $14.3 billion in 2019. Annual revenue plunged by nearly a third to $181.5 billion, down from $264.9 billion in 2019. It was the worst performance in four decades. In the face of historically low oil prices last year, Exxon slashed its capital spending by more than a third to $21.4 billion and froze its quarterly dividend. The company late last year announced plans to lay off 1,900 U.S. workers, including at least 700 in the Houston area, in February. Exxon's fourth quarter results include a severance charge of $326 million. These cost-cutting measures are expected to save Exxon about $6 billion per year by 2023 relative to 2019, Woods said. During this period of low oil prices, Exxon said it is focusing on low-cost, high-margin oil fields such as the Permian Basin of West Texas, Brazil, and in offshore Guyana. The company this week announced the creation of a new business, ExxonMobil Low Carbon Solutions, to develop 20 carbon capture projects around the world to help reduce greenhouse emissions. The new $3 billion investment in carbon capture technology comes as San Francisco-based activist investor Engine Number One launched a proxy fight against the oil giant, pressuring company leaders to focus more on renewable energy to improve its financial performance. ConocoPhillips loses $772 million in fourth quarter. ConocoPhillips reported its second straight quarterly loss, capping a challenging 2020 market marked by the pandemic and oil crash. The Houston independent oil producer on Tuesday said it lost $772 million during the fourth quarter, compared with a loss of $450 million in the third quarter and a profit of $260 million in the second. Revenue improved to $6 billion from $4.4 billion in the third quarter and $4 billion in the second. There was nothing easy about 2020. But the lessons from the year served to strengthen our conviction that ConocoPhillips offers the right value proposition for this volatile business. Free cash flow generation, a strong balance sheet, commitment to differential returns of and on capital, and ESG leadership, CEO Ryan Lance said in a statement. Despite the significant industry-wide downturn in 2020, we successfully delivered this value proposition and remain committed to it. Demand for crude evaporated during 2020 with economic lockdowns and travel restrictions to slow the spread of the coronavirus. ConocoPhillips said it lost $2.7 billion in 2020 compared with a profit of $7.2 billion in 2019. Annual revenue plunged by nearly half to $19.3 billion, down from $36.7 billion in 2019. ConocoPhillips this month completed its acquisition of Concho Resources, a $9.7 billion deal, gives the company a dominant position in the Permian Basin of West Texas and southeastern New Mexico. The company late last year said it will start laying off 500 or more Houston area employees starting this month.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. Education section. Single mother pursues healthcare dream. Midland College Profiles. The road to an associate degree wasn't easy for Annabelle Rivas. She took a non-traditional path to college. She lived with her father in Mexico until the age of 16. They had a troubled relationship, and she was eventually put out of the house and lived on the streets of Mexico. However, this past December, Rivas graduated from Midland College with an Associate of Applied Science degree in Health Information Management and is now looking forward to entering MC's nursing program in the fall. A genuine caretaker, Rivas always wanted to become a nurse. She entered a nursing program in Mexico and worked there for 3 years. "I went to nursing school in Mexico and got married," she said. "We had financial problems. I became pregnant with my oldest child. School, work, and raising a young family put stress on her marriage, resulting in divorce." In search of a better life, Rivas eventually left Mexico with her two children when she was 20 years old, following her boyfriend from Mexico to Eagle Pass. Language was a barrier to become a nurse in the U.S., she said. When I moved to Eagle Pass, I worked in housekeeping at a hospital for 4 years. I had no English skills, 2 children, and I worked full-time. As a result, I could not go to school and pursue my dream of becoming a nurse. Rivas's relationship with her boyfriend ended poorly, and she moved to Midland 3 years ago from Eagle Pass. Alone and pregnant with her 3rd child, she and her 2 children entered Safe Place of the Permian Basin, located in Midland. I had no money, no family support, no house, Rivas explained. It was just me, my children, and God. It was very challenging. In the shelter, the staff would only speak to her in English, so she began taking English as a second language class at the Midland College Cogdell Learning Center. It was a first step toward her dream. As Rivas learned English, she enrolled at Midland College in the Health Information Management Program. I did not feel that my English was good enough to go into nursing, she recalled, so I decided to pursue a major where I could be close to that profession until my English improved. Her passion and love have always been nursing. A 2020 recipient of the Midland College Bill Pace Cogdell Scholarship, Rivas now has the resources to pursue her dream of becoming a nurse. Outreach and Bill Pace Cogdell Scholarship Coordinator Josie Samaguay understands the drive that brought Annabel Rivas to Midland College. Annabel has shown herself and her children that hard work, perseverance, and faith are what it takes to accomplish any goal. Her heartwarming personality goes hand in hand with the health care goal she is pursuing. I am so proud of Annabel. Once Rivas finishes her nursing degree, she plans to stay in Midland and raise her family. My children and I love it here, Rivas said. Midland has been very supportive. Rivas said that she would give this advice to other students who have a dream and want to go to pursue higher education. Sometimes we have a fear of the future. We ask ourselves, what if I'm not going to make it? We always have time. It passes anyway. There are consequences to the decisions we make in life. Education is a benefit for our children. If you want to make a better life for yourself and your children, education is the key. Texas will require students to take STAR test in person. By Aliyah Swabi from the Texas Tribune. Texas public school students must show up in person to take the STAR test this spring, and districts can apply for waivers to socially distanced test takers, according to recent guidance released by the Texas Education Agency. The state is moving forward with the state standardized tests taken in grades 3 through 12 this spring and summer during the pandemic and requiring students to take them at a monitored testing site. School districts can set up sites outside of their schools, including performing arts centers, hotels, and recreation centers, where they can ensure equitable access and maintain test security. Test is requiring all districts to allow in-person learning for all students who want it, with few exceptions. A state survey at the end of October showed 2.8 million of 5.5 million students were learning on campus, meaning millions were still learning remotely. Although some may be reluctant to return in person during the pandemic, Texas high school students receiving remote instruction who do not show up to take the required standardized exams may not be able to graduate. Texas has always said students in younger grades who fail required STAR exams can move up to the next grade. And as of December, school districts will not receive state ratings this year based on how the students perform on the exams. According to the state guidance, school districts can apply for waivers to require students who are not scheduled to take the STAR to learn remotely on a testing day. That would allow them to socially distance test takers, as medical experts recommend for indoor activities. The state has also allowed districts to extend the testing window for those taking the exams online. Additional testing days are optional and at the discretion of the district. However, districts should consider the potential impact of not having the assessment data to better understand how well students have mastered knowledge and skills in various grades and subjects. New York and Michigan have already asked the Biden administration for a waiver from annual standardized tests, which are required by federal law. Texas Education Commissioner Mike Morath said this week at a State Board of Education meeting that he would not seek a similar waiver this year. Morath said the data from the tests will show the extent of the education gaps Texas students have experienced during the devastating pandemic. Students may have lost more than 3 months of learning this summer, according to the state study of optional exams from last spring and this fall. But the data was limited since not all students took the exams and the exams were not proctored. Texas is planning to transition to statewide online testing by 2022 and signed $388 million, four-year contracts, with two companies to administer, develop, and score the exams. In 2020, after Texas received a federal waiver to cancel the STAR, it reduced its contract with Educational Testing Service by $19 million.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, Biden Should Pledge to End Traffic Deaths, by Amy Cohen and Rebecca Sonkin, special to the Washington Post. Presidents, like millions of Americans, have grieved loved ones lost to car crashes. Former President Bill Clinton's father was thrown into a ditch and left to die when his tire blew out. Former President Barack Obama's father was made legless by one crash and killed in another. President Joe Biden's first wife and infant daughter were killed when their car was T-boned at a two-way stop. Despite their intimate knowledge of the ruin of traffic fatalities, no president has comprehensively confronted this public health crisis. Biden and his nominee for Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg, have an opportunity to change that. They can make a public pledge to achieve zero traffic deaths by 2050. The Biden administration inherits a catastrophe that uniquely bedevils the United States among high-income countries. U.S. traffic fatalities rose 11.5% from 2010 to 2018, while the European Union recorded a drop of 23%. Europeans treat road deaths as preventable. We barely try. The surge in traffic violence has continued even as many Americans work and learn at home because of the pandemic. In November, when the motor vehicle fatality rate spiked 23% on a miles-driven basis versus the year prior, it marked the sixth consecutive month of a distressing new pattern. Americans are driving less, but dying at higher rates. The toll is extraordinary. As Biden put it in a Yale commencement speech in 2015 about his family's crash, "My whole world was altered forever." We know what he means. In 2013, Amy's 12-year-old son, Sammy Cohen Eckstein, was struck in a Brooklyn crosswalk. In 1992, Rebecca's brother, Paul Sonkin, was 16 when his friend flipped his car off a freeway ramp in Ann Arbor, Michigan. These deaths have bisected our lives and fractured our families. At every holiday, meal, and milestone, the cliche of the empty chair manifests our reality. Both of us were oblivious to the epidemic of traffic violence until it was too late. The good news is there is so much we can do. Canada, another country with a lot of open road, has achieved a traffic mortality rate of less than half of that in the United States, thanks to smart street design and graduated licensing. Norway, achieved a more than fourfold decline in fatalities since 1985, had reached zero traffic deaths in Oslo in 2019 by lowering speeds and providing safe space for people walking and biking. Similar strategies in Bogota, Colombia, are credited with a 27% reduction in traffic fatalities over 3 years. We recognize cars are bound up in the country's ideals of freedom. We recognize most Americans need to drive. We drive too. But the nation can't afford to keep looking away from the 100 Americans who die by cars each day. In base financial terms, the pathology is too expensive, amounting to $1 trillion a year, according to the U.S. Transportation Department. Less calculable is the moral debt owed for doing nothing. In this era of unprecedented public health crises, thwarting this one should be an easy sell for a president of any party. Victims are bipartisan. They reside in every state and die at every age. They range across race, class, gender, and ability. They reach into urban, rural, and suburban communities. Every year, when another 40,000 Americans are killed, their families join a snowballing, if disparate and devastated, constituency. Still, no president has voiced a national vision for keeping Americans safe while en route to school and work and home again. Silence prevails. Driven by our own failure to act sooner, our organization, Families for Safe Streets, has confronted traffic violence since 2014. We have successfully advocated lowered speed limits, redesigned streets for safety, and established automated enforcement. We have also been able to expunge from policy reports the word accident, which suggests deaths are non-preventable in favor of crash. We've staged die-ins and testified at legislative hearings. Every month, we share an email that acknowledges birthdays marred by preventable loss. We are heartened by the progress towards safe, equitable streets happening in cities from San Francisco to South Bend, Indiana. But a local patchwork approach is no substitute for federal strategy backed by the power of the presidency. That is why we are urging the administration to join more than 200 organizations in committing to solve this crisis. To start, policy ought to prioritize evidence-based, human-centered solutions. Lower speed limits in crowded urban areas. Tether infrastructure funds to specific reductions in traffic fatalities. Advance life-saving technologies in vehicles and on the roadways. Support crash victims as we rightly do crime victims. Americans deserve to know just how much the president cares about our lives. Our only measure is the action taken toward preserving them. The stakes are high. The presidents know our sorrow. They live it. Biden must be the one to do something about it. Cohen is co-founder of Families for Safe Streets.
Meds at night or morning? To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm 85 and had been taking my blood pressure medicine in the morning for probably 25 years. I take metoprolol, losartan, and a water pill. Lately, I've been reading that I should take this medicine at night so that we will be better protected against heart attacks and strokes when we wake up in the morning, when most of them occur. Since I started taking my medicine at night, my readings have been wonderful. For example, 117 over 70 at the doc's office. To my surprise, my heart doctor told me to return to taking my meds in the morning because she doesn't agree with the new suggestions. What is your opinion? Answer. A study from Spain in 2019 showed a surprisingly large benefit to taking blood pressure medicines at night. People who did had a lower risk of heart attack and stroke. The difference was so large that some experts have difficulty believing how important the time of day was. While waiting for confirmation, however, I have told my patients to take all blood pressure medicine at night. However, some people find taking a diuretic, water pill, at nighttime is problematic. New mom, not in the mood for husband's entreaties. Dear Abby, Wednesday, February 3rd. Dear Abby, I am a first-time mommy of a beautiful 2.5-month-old little boy. I should also mention that I'm 40 years old. My husband is constantly asking for sex. I mean, every day. I honestly do not feel like having it. I'm so worn out by the day-to-day chores of being a wife and motherhood that when the baby goes to sleep, I go to sleep immediately. My husband refuses to understand how exhausted I am, and his constantly asking for sex makes me want it even less. I try to reassure him that it's not him, because he thinks he has done something wrong or that I'm not attracted to him anymore. But he also doesn't help me out much around here. So basically, I'm asking what I can do. Touchy subject in West Virginia. Dear Touchy, you and your husband are overdue for a frank talk. Sit him down and explain exactly what you need from him. Tell him you need his help so the entire burden of taking care of his home and his baby isn't entirely on your shoulders. After you have finished doing that, point out that if he contributes to the household tasks and baby duties, it will take the pressure off you and make it more likely that you can relax and get in the mood for something more pleasant. Dear Abby, my son is in an abusive marriage. He is verbally, mentally, and emotionally abused by his wife constantly. She does everything she can to force him to leave. She tells him it is her house and she wants him to go. They bought the house together and they both work and pay the bills. He won't leave because he doesn't want to leave his kids. Is there any kind of support for abused men? Concerned Dad in North Carolina. Dear Dad, there certainly is, and I hope you will tell your son to reach out for it. No one should be harassed the way your son is being, because the effects can be not only devastating, but also long-lasting. The National Domestic Violence Hotline, thehotline.org, or 1-800-799-7233, and Stop Abuse for Everyone, stopabuseforeveryone.org, serve male victims of abuse as well as female. Urge him to contact one or both of them. Dear Abby, I've married into a family that celebrates birthdays of members who have died. They are not observing the passing, but doing full-fledged birthday events. This is a practice I have never before experienced, and most of these people I have never met. I don't want to be disrespectful, but it seems really odd, especially since many of those people died years ago. It's becoming difficult to do more than express my sympathy for their loss. Is this done by other families? Bewildered in Florida. Dear Bewildered, if there is anything I have learned in this course of writing this column, as well as my own journey through life, it is that individuals, families, and cultures do not have identical ways of grieving or honoring their deceased loved ones. While it may seem unusual to you, this is the way they remember their loved ones. Because this is your spouse's family, talk with them about how to navigate this issue without causing hurt feelings. If you are uncomfortable participating in these celebrations, continue to be respectful, but attend fewer of them. Horoscopes. Happy birthday for Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Aesthetic, detailed, and a perfectionist, you're brilliant at what you do. With your fine sense of timing, this year you hang in there and pounce when the reality is right. Your project is extremely successful and profitable, and it's best to hire a money manager. If single, you're known to be commitment phobic, and this year you find an unconventional and satisfying situation. If attached, you're together like glue. Virgo adores you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic. 4, positive. 3, average. 2, so-so. 1, difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 5 stars. You can enjoy a bit of escapism today. Metaphysical literature and studies intrigue you. You also could be drawn to romantic adventures or espionage thrillers. You will feel power and strength through being a bit discreet. Tonight, keep your mystery. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 3 stars. Today brings a series of charming but eccentric people your way. Verify information you're given. There is an illusional quality to your perceptions of others. Good or bad, they might not be accurate. Tonight, you become aware of how important relationships are to you. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, 5 stars. Get organized. An orderly schedule and neatness enhance your well-being and productivity. It is also an ideal time to implement new health habits. You will feel an urge to be productive. Your job and projects bring deep satisfaction. Tonight, your horizons are widening. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 5 stars. Today allows you to relax and enjoy simple pleasures. A new friend is affectionate and caring. The fine arts brighten leisure hours. Attend an online concert, play, or an art show. A youthful and whimsical mood surrounds you. Tonight, let the good times roll on. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 5 stars. You will be very generous with loved ones and lavish with purchases for the home. A sense of humor makes all the difference if a social situation is delicate. In-laws may voice surprising new ideas. Tonight, you attract love and affection from family members. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 4 stars. Alert and alive, your mind relishes a challenge today. You'd enjoy solving a riddle, playing a word game, or learning something new. Some associates will carry you forward with their warmth and enthusiasm. Tonight, if you sense aggression, though, back away. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 5 stars. Your financial situation is about to brighten considerably. Debts or other drains on your resources diminish. You would be well paid if you seek extra work. You will be able to make a fresh start financially. Tonight, look at repeating cycles where money is concerned. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st. 5 stars. You feel the healing of old wounds and the opening of opportunities. Today favors an attitude of largesse. Elevate your standards and expectations. This is the start of a whole new cycle of great growth. Tonight, clothing selected now will be beautiful and serviceable. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 5 stars. There is an accent on psychology and mental health today. You develop inner mental and emotional strength through being sensitive to your own deepest drives. Dreams and psychic hunches are plentiful. Tonight, service to one who really needs it will be very satisfying. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 5 stars. Your social life is bright and active today. You'll be eager to get to know an acquaintance better. A friendship propels you toward new awareness and artistic expression. Accept and issue invitations. Tonight, make or buy gifts that suggest humor and a personal message. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 5 stars. New love warms the cold days. The arts provide pleasure, especially dance. It's an ideal time to select personal emblems or insignia. You'll give much consideration to your image and reputation. Today concludes with a joyful euphoria. Tonight, your manners carry you a long way. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 4 stars. You will try to share alternative ideas and knowledge to uplift others. Foreign foods, customs, and music delight you. You will find TV and radio broadcasts informative and enjoyable. Take time to read seasonal literature, too. Tonight, you solve any transportation problems.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.